The Pat Kenny Show on News Talk.
Now, the Kurds are fighting for their land, just so you understand. They're fighting for their land. And as somebody wrote in a very, very powerful article today, they didn't help us in the Second World War. They didn't help us with Normandy, as an example. They mentioned names of different battles. They were there, but they're there to help us with their land. And that's a different thing. In addition to that, we have spent tremendous amounts of money on helping the Kurds in terms of ammunition, in terms of weapons, in terms of money, in terms of pay.
That was the U.S. President Donald Trump explaining the rather strange logic behind the decision to withdraw military support for their Kurdish allies in Syria. This comes after Kurdish forces fought ISIS alongside the U.S. for several years. But to demonstrate the level of hypocrisy, here is Donald Trump speaking just a couple of weeks ago.
We do get along great with the Kurds. We're trying to help them a lot. Don't forget, that's their territory. We have to help them. I want to help them. Go ahead. What's next? They fought with us. They fought with us. They died with us. They died. We lost tens of thousands of Kurds died fighting ISIS. They died for us and with us and for themselves. They died for themselves. But they're great people. And we have not forget. We don't forget. I don't forget what happens someday later. But I can tell you that I don't forget. These are great people.
It's a kind of what did the Romans ever do for us moment from Donald Trump and that dramatic U-turn. The Turkish troops, of course, launched a long-anticipated offensive in northeast Syria, and President Erdogan said operation, which is codenamed Peace Spring, would eliminate the terror threat towards our country, that threat from Kurdish militants and from Islamic State jihadis. Put simply, Turkey, a NATO nation, is bombing those responsible for defeating ISIS. Well, to get reaction and analysis to this fairly bizarre situation, I'm joined on the line by Middle East correspondent for The Guardian, Martin Chulov, who's speaking to us from northeastern Syria. You're very welcome. Martin, exactly how large was the military action yesterday by Turkey?
There were limited strikes to start with. There were airstrikes in a small corridor close to the Euphrates River along the Turkish border between two Arab towns. The Turks have had their eyes on for quite some time now. There were around about 60 to 70 artillery strikes. There were airstrikes as well. There were a couple of casualties. Elsewhere along the border, there was sporadic shelling throughout the late afternoon and early evening.
The casualties numbers, initially two, we're told maybe 15, 16, probably hard to get a definitive account of how many people died or how many people were injured. But are Kurdish civilians on the move now? Are they getting out?
Yeah, the streets of the northeastern Syria are very busy, and they're one way. They're all heading to the Iraqi border. Many hundreds of cars it's heading in that direction. It must be said, there's not much panic. People are moving along in an orderly way. There are some on horse, riding motorbikes, lots of luggage strapped to roofs, but no screeching through checkpoints. It seems to be an orderly evacuation to Iraq at this point.
Now, there is dismay in Europe, certainly in the UK, in France, about the action of the United States. Was this totally unexpected? Because certainly President Erdogan had been looking for something like this for quite some time.
He certainly had. President Erdogan had been clear the border of Kurds, basically. This is not about the Islamic State for him. This has been about Kurds since the outset of the Syrian war, and it remains so now. His objective changed the colour of the border from the Euphrates River, which is roughly halfway along the 500-mile stretch that Turkey shares with Syria, to Iraq, that is currently dominated, wants to move a significant Arab population into that area, which he thinks will give him a buffer zone against any Kurdish militant attacks. The war has been used by the Kurds to amplify their own positions and ambitions in northeastern Syria, which is their stronghold, and then use that attacks against Turkey in its southeast, where they fought a four-decade war with the Kurdish militant group, the PKK.
Now, the question of what will happen to the ISIS forces who are under the, I suppose, the captivity of the Kurds at the moment, that will change. Is this likely to embolden ISIS? Is it likely to revitalize ISIS efforts in the area?
Well, there's a significant risk of that. The Kurds are guarding the ISIS prisoners. They are guarding around 80,000 of them, accused ISIS members or outright militants themselves. These are people they've inherited after the fight that you spoke about in your introduction. It was a deadly fight. They lost about 11,000 Kurdish lives over the last 4 years, and they've since turned sailors. They are performing a significant role for the international community and for global security in ensuring that, to the best of their abilities, aren't able to mobilize and to break out. The risk now is that with the Kurdish capacity being tested on the battlefront, and also morale perhaps a bit low and perhaps than there was before to serve the US or even foreign interests, could that revitalize ISIS? Could it suggest to them that they can test their boundaries, that out and test the perimeter, because the Kurds have now got other things to do?
Now, so many critics of this particular initiative, the German Foreign Minister Heiko Maas said Turkey ran the risk that it would further destabilize the region and strengthen ISIS. The Russian President Vladimir Putin, who's currently selling missiles to Turkey, told Turkey to carefully weigh the situation so as not to damage the overall efforts to resolve the Syrian crisis. Hassan Rouhani, the Iranian president, called on Turkey to reconsider its decision to launch that offensive and said it could create new problems for the region's security. I'm just wondering, who are Erdogan's friends, besides Donald Trump? Who are his friends when we look across the region?
Well, Erdogan has formed an alliance of sorts with Vladimir Putin. He is open to doing business with the Syrian regime after all these years of war. But after that, the friends start to fall away very quickly. Turkey has a very narrow interest at the moment, and top of their agenda is what to do about the PKK. They say there is no distinction between the Kurdish forces in northeastern Syria and the PKK, a mortal foe, more so than ISIS is. They've abandoned many other alliances. They've walked away from the US in many ways, although they do engage with them, clearly does with them. But Turkey has become far more nationalistic in its worldview. 10 years ago, it was looking to be more or less a good neighbor, to play a proactive role right throughout the region. Not so anymore. It's doubling down on what it believes to be the things that matter to it, and first and foremost, that is the Kurds.
Now, we know what the political establishment of Erdogan feels about the Kurds. What do ordinary Turkish people feel? I mean, are they racist in their attitude to the Kurds? Do they regard the Kurds as somehow inferior beings?
The Kurds in Turkey, those who are not okay, those who do fall in behind a nationalist agenda or worldview, are more or less accepted, assimilated, and there isn't a great deal of distinction there. Active, those who pose any sort of an organized threat against Erdogan or the ruling party are very quickly marginalized and tarred with the brush of the PKK that the ruling party throws around very, very quickly. So it's a mixed bag there. Erdogan would like to say he draws no distinctions between Turks and Kurds. They are one, but politically he certainly does. And in some parts of the country, certainly the southeast, it's not easy being a Kurd. If you've done well in business in Istanbul or elsewhere, perhaps it's a bit easier.
The question of whether this will be a short-term action, that they will very quickly establish a buffer zone and then retreat behind the Turkish border, under pressure from perhaps in the United States, the Republicans, particularly Lindsey Graham, not pleased at all with the president's actions, but also the European Commission. Jean-Claude Juncker said if the Turkish plan involves the creation of a so-called safe zone, don't expect the European Union to pay for it.
There's a couple of reasons for that. One of the reasons is that the fundamental idea behind this safe zone is a demographic shift. What Erdogan is looking to do is move Syrians, who are 3 million of them, back into northeastern Syria, into the zone they're now trying to clear, which is between two towns called Tal Abyad and Ras Alain. He's slated that as a potential destination for up to 1 million of those Syrians, nearly all of them Arabs, in Istanbul, and he wants to move them back in between the Turks and the Kurds. Now, this is a very significant demographic swap program, no question about that. He's done something similar rest of the country as well. And as I say, it comes back to what the ultimate objective here is, and that is taking full control of both sides of the 500-mile border that Turkey and Syria.
Well, the EU is not going to pay for it. The carrot that Erdogan would probably dangle is that you've got a lot of refugees in your countries. Well, we'll accommodate them back in this safe zone as long as you pay for it. But I'm not sure that logic is very compelling against the background of what is happening at the moment. Martin, thank you very much for joining us from, you know, a tricky area of the world. And the Skype was not entirely 100%, but we had to bear with it. Martin Chuloff, Guardian Middle East correspondent. Thank you very much.